This episode is one that I have been looking so forward to sharing with you all. My guest today has a PhD in social psychology and has been studying the science of relationships for over a decade. She's an expert in attachment science, which very accurately predicts relationship behavior. In addition, she's an expert in the science of attraction and understands the deep underlying reasons why certain people are attracted to others. She has coached thousands of clients on how to find and keep healthy and happy romantic relationships. You may have seen her on TikTok as the Dating Decoder. And with that, please welcome to the show, Dr. Sarah Hensley.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. I'm so excited to share this show with everybody because I think that no matter what stage of life you're in, how old you are, you're going to benefit from this.
Yeah, absolutely. Personal development is something that obviously I'm super passionate about and love to share what's on my heart and what's my passion with the world.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I want to first ask you about your own personal healing journey and how you got to the point of relationship coaching.
Yeah, so it's kind of a long story. I'm going to try to make it a little bit more brief than than what it would normally take me to tell the story. But before I tell the story, I think it's important to note that my ex-husband did pass away 3 years ago. And so a lot of what happened in my first marriage is very relevant to my story, but I also want to be really sensitive to the fact that he's gone and I'm mature enough to know there are two sides to every story. And I want to be really sensitive to him and to his family, but I also want to be able to tell my truth about how my first marriage really shaped me. And in my journey. So my first marriage was full of a lot of really serious problems. There was abuse, there was a lot of infidelity and on his part, and he became an alcoholic, and it was a really, really difficult struggle in that marriage. And I was very trauma bonded to him, and we had two kids together. I really wanted to leave so many times, but I just didn't know how to leave. And it really is one of those things where from an outside perspective, you would look at that relationship and say, how could somebody not leave? How could somebody stay in that? Right. But the power of a trauma bond is really strong. And I started being interested in relationships in graduate school. I really started being interested in relationships, trying to figure out my own marriage, trying to figure out myself. Why couldn't I leave? What was, you know, the real root of the issues in my marriage? I finally did end up filing for divorce and leaving that marriage after 10 years, which was really, really difficult. And then I was in a very, very broken state psychologically. I was in a very low point, and I knew I had a lot of healing work to do. I knew that I had attachment traumas. I just didn't know how to heal those traumas. And so as I kind of launched on my own healing journey and started to get better, he started to severely decline, and he did end up passing away from a drug and alcohol overdose about a year after we got divorced.
Oh my God. I'm so and sorry for that.
Thank you. You know, I appreciate that. But I wouldn't change anything that I've been through in my life because it shaped me and it got me to the place where I am today. Of course, I wish we could have him back. You know, it's a very, very sad, difficult, devastating thing that happened. And I can't change it. And my two choices were let it destroy me or grow from it. And I always say that pain is the best launching point for growth. And that was certainly true for me. I definitely hit emotional rock bottom after that happened. And during that time, I was also dating someone who had really severe dismissive avoidant attachment. I knew that that was his attachment at the time, and I was still very much wanting that relationship to work. And then when my ex-husband died, he really pulled away even more emotionally. Kind of the time when I needed him the most is the time he pulled away the most. Mm-hmm. And that's very common with dismissive avoidance. And I just knew that I needed to end that relationship for good. And I needed to isolate and really take some time to figure myself out. And in that time, I did a lot of attachment healing work. I just kind of scoured the science. I scoured personal resources on, you know, the internet, YouTube, everything I could find. And I got really close to God at that time as well. You know, so I was doing a lot of psychological work. I was really diving into my faith. And over the course of about a year, I really transformed dramatically who I was. I no longer suffered from anxiety or depression. I was coping with the grief appropriately. I was definitely able to function a lot better as a parent. And then when I finally decided I was ready for a real relationship, God kind of gave me a little nudge. You're ready. Go put yourself out there. And I met my husband right away. It was kind of crazy. When I first felt really ready, he just walked right into my life. And we have a beautiful, amazing, loving, secure, and healthy relationship. And so the ending is very happy. Although, you know, grief never totally goes away, it's something that I feel like I can manage in a healthy way.
That's great. I love that there is a happy ending for you. And you went through all of that to get there, but mm-hmm. it's all about, you know, bettering yourself. Absolutely. and then it comes.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's amazing. I love your story. So thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
I noticed as you were telling that you mentioned trauma bond. So that kind of sparked something in me. Would you mind explaining that a little bit?
Sure.
Because I feel like that's something a lot of people may have, but mm-hmm. not realize what it even is.
Absolutely. So the concept of trauma bonding, it's really a more mild form of Stockholm syndrome. Mm-hmm. And it's very common in relationships where there is abuse. But there is milder forms of trauma bonding that don't involve really any trauma. They just involve a concept called intermittent reinforcement. So intermittent reinforcement is this idea that sometimes we get our needs met and it feels really good, and other times we are abandoned or abused. And then that is paired on and off together for a really long time, and it creates both anxiety as well as addiction. So when you think about things that are addicting, like gambling or drugs, they involve intermittent reinforcement. When you gamble and you bet your money and you win, it feels really good. You get all the good chemicals rushing through your brain. And then if you lose your money, it feels really bad, giving you some anxiety and making you want to bet again to try to win your money back. And the same thing with drugs. You have the high, you know, you feel really good, you crash, you have the low, making you want to use the drug again. And so relationships can be addicting in the exact same way. In fact, the neurological processes that are present in addiction to drugs or gambling are the same ones that are present in addiction to people. So with a trauma bond, there's usually some form of abuse in the relationship dynamic. So either verbal or emotional abuse, even physical abuse. And so in those relationship dynamics, we have times where the abuser is kind and gentle and loving and is meeting your needs, but then that's always paired with the cycle of abuse where, you know, then they're a destructive or abusive or neglectful. And you are always just trying to manage that next crisis and thinking, well, if we can just get over this crisis,
yeah,
right, and we can get back to the good. And so you're on that hamster wheel of, during the low points, just working so hard to try to get back to the good parts or the normalcy. And it's an emotional addiction, mm-hmm. right? You're just on that hamster wheel trying and trying and trying and trying. And you are chemically addicted to this person. And it's a really, really, really difficult thing to break. In fact, the science is pretty clear that the only way to break it is strict no contact, or if you have children, extremely limited contact, which is what I ended up having to do inside of my marriage, which was extremely difficult. And it's so strong that after I divorced my husband and he moved out, I actually reconciled with him after we were legally divorced, and that ended even worse than the first ending to our marriage. So for people that keep going back to abusive relationships, a lot of people just don't understand it. They say, why would you do that? It's because you're addicted. I mean, right. Your brain has been hijacked to be addicted to getting the dopamine and the serotonin hits when things are good. And it just makes you want to keep going back and keep trying. And you have a lot of toxic hope mm-hmm. that, hey, this is going to get better, and it usually doesn't.
Wow. And I feel like that's something that is not talked about enough.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I have peers in my social group that I see, you know, with something that I would think is a trauma bond. Absolutely. And it's like they're not even aware of it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, talking about that more, I think, is great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and with that, too, you know, you have, it's understanding, you know, attachment science as well, which is something that you specialize in.
Yes.
And so can you explain what that is, what attachment science is, and maybe how to understand what your attachment style is?
Sure, absolutely. So attachment science started in the late 1950s with John Bowlby, and it's been further refined in thousands of empirical studies over the courses of many, many decades. And so it's really solid psychological science, and we've nailed it pretty much now in terms of knowing exactly what attachment can predict and what its limitations are. So attachment is actually very good at predicting how people behave inside of relationships, almost in a scary, accurate way. So essentially, attachment science suggests that our earliest childhood experiences with our caregivers imprint us with a lot of messages into our subconscious about what it means to be in relation with relationship with someone else, and really what it means to be us.
So right? It's rooted in childhood.
It's rooted in childhood. Okay. And so our parents give us these messages by the way they interact with each other, as well as the way they interacted with us as children. And those messages are on repeat. And so the way the subconscious works is it will take anything that's on repeat. Whatever is repeated is what it will grab onto and hold onto. And the subconscious mind really drives our behavior in terms of relationships. It just does. And there are survival reasons for that, evolutionary reasons for that. And so if our subconscious is in the driver's seat, whatever is imprinted into the subconscious on repeat from childhood is what's going to play out mm-hmm. in our adult relationships. And so we have what are called attachment styles. Some people have more of an anxious attachment style where they received some degree of intermittent reinforcement in childhood of love, affection, emotional attunement. So they are very anxious inside of relationships, needing lots of reassurance, lots of attention, lots of affection. They have a lot of needs. They are really afraid of abandonment. They don't like to be alone. And then we have, on the other side of the spectrum, we have avoidance. Individuals with avoidant attachment were often somewhat emotionally neglected in childhood. So their parents were just a family that didn't do feelings. When feelings were brought up, it was kind of like, oh, calm down, you're fine. Don't worry about that type of mentality. And they grew up to learn how to suppress their feelings, and they're very uncomfortable with emotional vulnerability. They tend to be too distant inside of relationships. They tend to back away from people after a certain period of time when there's been too much intimacy cultivated in the relationship. They really struggle to handle conflict inside of relationships. And then we have what used to be known as disorganized attachment. Now it's called fearful avoidant attachment, which really develops through some degree of childhood trauma that really breaks the trust between the child and one or more of their caregivers. And that trust wound is very, very profound. And it causes a disorganized pattern of reacting and trying to get your needs met inside of a relationship. So they may have some activating strategies and be very anxious inside of their relationship, only for something to happen and then turn around and shut down and be avoidant and pull away. So they are the hot and cold attachment style, whereas the anxious preoccupied is always coming towards the partner, the dismissive avoidant and always moving away from the partner, and the fearful avoidant can kind of do either one depending upon what their partner's doing or what the situation is. And then we have people that are securely attached. I think research used to say it was half the population. It's not. It's a very small portion of the population actually grows up with, you know, secure attachment.
Oh,
so
yeah, absolutely.
Most people have some degree of insecure attachment.
Mm-hmm. So for someone who doesn't maybe know their attachment style, what is a way that you can find that out?
Absolutely. So there are definitely childhood predictors. So there's the research and the science is out there. Anybody can kind of go find it. But to just summarize, the childhood predictors of each attachment style are pretty clear. So for the anxious, preoccupied folks, I usually see in my practice that they had really stable childhoods with loving parents. They reported that their parents got along. They had good relationships with both of their parents. But there was something in the family dynamic that made the emotional support and affection and attunement that the child received inconsistent. So maybe parents worked a lot. When they were home, it was really great, but they were gone a lot because they both had jobs that where they worked long hours. Or maybe there were a lot of siblings around, and so they just didn't get enough of that one-on-one attention. For dismissive avoidance, I often hear the same thing. I had a good childhood. My parents showed up for me. They took me to the baseball games. My mom packed my lunch. You know, I had what I needed in childhood. But when I really probe further, they are a family that doesn't do feelings. So if I ask something like, were you able to go to your mom or were you able to go to your dad and ask for emotional support when you had an issue in childhood? Could you do that? Did you feel safe doing that? And most of the time they will answer, I don't remember ever doing that. It just wasn't something we did. I always kind of handled my feelings on my own. I never felt the need to go to my parents. Mm-hmm. And then when I kind of probe further about their family dynamic, the attitude of the parents was often very dismissive around feelings. So the focus was on achievement and responsibility and not on emotions. And then with fearful avoidant attachment, there's usually almost always a trauma. It could be a little T trauma, like my parents got divorced. Maybe the divorce wasn't handled very well. Maybe it was kind of a high conflict divorce. Maybe it was just that parents argued all the time. So there was a lack of safety in the parental relationship between the parents. Or there could be bigger T traumas like abuse or a parent with a serious mental health issue or a substance abuse issue or something like that. Something that would really create a lack of safety and a lack of trust mm-hmm. in the parental relationship.
Okay. And so it sounds like with your coaching practice, you do a lot of individual work.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And then do you then bring the couple together
yes.
and then do... So do you start out individually and then work your way into
yes,
together?
That is a okay. hard and fast rule for me. I will do an initial session maybe with the couple together, but then if they want to take that coaching journey, I always work with individuals first mm-hmm. to give them the foundational tools of how to cope with their own attachment insecurities and how to start healing their specific insecurities, because those tools are probably going to be a little bit different if they have different attachment blueprints, right? Attachment styles. So when I work with couples individually, I really focus on the nuances of their attachment, what specific wounds they carry, how their behavior is specifically dysfunctional. And then there's a journey of accountability there, because when most people come to me as a couple, they're sort of just pointing the finger at the other person a lot of time, like they're the problem.
Oh, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's a super dysfunctional way to start your healing journey. Right. If you just believe that you're fine and your partner's the problem, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yes.
Even if it's, for example, an abusive situation like my first marriage, the problem that I had was that I didn't have any boundaries. I was codependent. And so I could have pointed the finger at him saying, well, he's the one with the rage problem and he's the one with the alcoholism. But at the same time, why wasn't I leaving? Why wasn't I standing up for myself? Why was I continuing to allow abuse for years and years and years? I had to point the finger at me and say my codependence and my lack of accountability and my lack of boundaries was problematic. And I had to take responsibility for that and learn to heal those things inside of me that were causing me to stay. So it's never a one-sided issue. Each person in a dysfunctional relationship has to come forward and say there are responsibilities that I have to take to fix my part of the dynamic before we can move forward.
This is so good. And I feel like this... Like your coaching practice, this strategy is a way to improve your life in other ways
Absolutely.
Rather than just your, you know, your marriage, your yeah. boyfriend and girlfriend dynamic. Like it just improves your relationships all together, which then improves your life.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, dramatically, my healing, I was a very pessimistic person. I was crippled by anxiety. And that wasn't just in terms of my relationship. That was just the way I lived my life. I always saw the downsides of everything. I focused on the problems. I was anxious about everything. I didn't trust myself. I didn't trust other people. I was constantly worrying, constantly just crippled with worry and anxiety over everything. And my healing released me from that. Now I'm kind of emotionally bulletproof. It was kind of how I would describe myself. There's nothing in this life that makes me all that upset.
Right. That so, you don't allow to.
I don't
you've
allow
healed
it.
That. You've healed that part
yeah,
of you.
Absolutely.
Wow. I love that. I feel like with relationship coaching, you approach it in a different way.
Yes.
So what does a coaching process look like for you? Mm-hmm. And how does it differ from, you know, your traditional therapy?
Sure. It is dramatically different than therapy. So therapy is a very exploratory process. It's talking a lot of talking that the clients do, coming to their own revelations through opening up, through being vulnerable. The therapist is kind of more of a guide. And it's a slower process. There's a lot of focus on individual situations or circumstances and how those impacted people. I'm looking at patterns. I am looking at, and I usually know people's patterns right after I do the assessment. I know if you put a fearful avoidant and a dismissive avoidant together, what their problems are going to look like, because I know the core wounds and triggers of both of those folks and what their trauma responses are and how their trauma responses are going to both trigger each other. So just kind of like a sports coach, I'm looking for patterns. I don't have to relive with them every fight. We don't have to bring up every negative thing that's happened. And in couples therapy, that's often what ends up happening. They're just rehashing the last fight, getting angry with each other all over again. And they're not really getting a lot of great solutions. And I'm not saying that across the board because there's a lot of great therapists out there. But the clients that usually seek me have failed in couples counseling. And they're looking for a solutions-focused process. So here are your patterns. Here's where what you need to do to fix those exercises, tools, strategies. And there's a lot of hard and fast rules that I give my clients. These are the new rules in your relationship, right? You have to follow them. And those rules prevent those patterns from reoccurring. Mm-hmm. So it's a step-by-step, do this, do that type of situation. We don't have to explore your feelings around every single situation, yeah. Right? It's more focused on how do we fix this. Mm-hmm. And then alongside that, there's some individual healing associated with their own attachment. And there's some fundamental tools of attachment healing that I give to all of my clients, even regardless of their attachment.
I think by the fact that yours is exploring many different things, specifically inner healing, those type of things, not like we're going to sit around and talk about our feelings. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit easier of an approach, I think. Yeah. So that's great.
It is. And it's really great for those with avoidant attachment who are very uncomfortable with vulnerability.
Right.
They don't want to rehash everything that's happened in the relationship. It's yes. extremely overwhelming to them. And that's part of why they shut down and stop participating in therapy, because they can't be vulnerable. They don't have a capacity to be vulnerable. And so in coaching, I don't require a ton of vulnerability of them. I teach them how to gain the capacity for vulnerability and then learn to practice that a little bit at a time. I don't just start with them, hey, be vulnerable. Tell me all your feelings about your partner. They can't do that. They don't have the capacity for it. And that's why they're going to couples therapy and they're failing. And so you have to build a dismissive avoidance capacity to be vulnerable. You have to build those connections around even them understanding what they're feeling in the first place or labeling what they're feeling, and then allowing them the opportunity to learn how to regulate their nervous system mm-hmm. when they have to explore their own emotions or handle the emotions of their partner, because their nervous system just goes into this freeze response. So they have to learn how to take control of their nervous system to even have the capacity.
Right. So what would you say is the most common attachment style? And what are the first steps that you would say to start healing that?
Mm-hmm. So the most common attachment I see in my practice is fearful avoidance. Now, the science usually says that's the most uncommon attachment style. So there may be a bias that fearful avoidance, because they have the most pain, they have the most wounds, they're more likely to seek help. So there may be fewer of them out there, but my practice has a ton of them because they are more likely than the others to seek help, because they're the most in pain of all the attachment styles, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So really, regardless of whatever your attachment insecurities are, the first step is just understanding that you have them and what are your patterns. You can't fix what you inherently do not understand about yourself. So the first step is a level of understanding, but understanding doesn't mean you will change. It doesn't mean you know how to change. It just means you see it, right?
Right.
So some of the first line healing strategies really involve becoming an authority over your thoughts, observing your thoughts, deciding which thoughts are true, which are productive, and deciding which ones need a cross out and a reframe, right? And really being super vigilant over your thought world, because thoughts lead to emotions, which lead to behavior. And so in the trigger cycle, when people are triggered inside of their relationships, when one of their attachment wounds is triggered, it's coming from the subconscious. They get an initial feeling in the body, and then the thought has to confirm it. Yes, I should feel this way, mm-hmm. right? Yes, I should be upset because my husband just did XYZ thing.
I notice this in myself often.
Yeah, right? And so then they go down the rabbit hole. My husband's such mm-hmm. a jerk. He doesn't even care about me. He's, you know, selfish, whatever it is. Well, what emotions does that produce? Anger, disappointment, frustration, helplessness, hopelessness. I mean, it could be a whole list of negative emotions. And then their behavior is just a direct result of those emotions, because those emotions are really uncomfortable, especially in the body. They're super uncomfortable. So then they just divert right into their attachment trauma response, whatever that is, anxiety, which is, you know, demanding, or pouting or protesting or whatever that is, or avoidance, a shutdown, a silencing, a stonewalling, whatever it is to pull away from the partner. And so the very first step in the trigger cycle that we actually have conscious control of is our thoughts. So I work on metacognitive skills with my clients, which are thinking about thinking, observing your own thoughts, and intervening on those thoughts. So instead of thinking, oh my gosh, my husband's such a jerk, we go, stop, hold on. My husband just said something I didn't like. How do I want to respond to that? And then we don't go into helplessness, hopelessness, frustration, anger. We go into empowerment. We go into confidence. We go into, you know, a state where we feel capable of handling this negative situation. And our emotions are not out of control. And we're then capable of acting rationally and respectfully. We're not yelling at them or giving them the silent treatment, right? We're saying, hey, I think we need to have a conversation that I'm curious what you meant by that, right? And instead of coming with, why were you so rude, right?
And which so, then it just makes it explode.
It does. Yeah. And then the second most foundational tool we work on is really calming down the nervous system. We figure out, where is their nervous system going? Is it going into flight? Is it going into fight? Is it going into freeze? Is it going into fawn? Those are the four trauma responses. And then what does that feel like in the body? And what are the specific exercises and tools we need to practice to get into this ventral vagal response, what we call rest and digest, our calm nervous system space. And that allows our rational brain to come back online, and it allows us to behave in the ways that we choose to behave, not in the unconscious trauma responses that we were participating in before.
I want to give you a scenario.
Okay.
And it's because I hear this a lot, you know, just in communication with people. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that this is something that is, you know, prevalent in a lot of people's relationship. And so how do you approach a couple who they met young, got married, had kids right off the bat? Typically, the wife stays home, helps with the kids, her dreams are let go of, he's working all the time to support the household. Eventually, it's just years of resentment. They've been together for a long time, and at this point, they're just operating as roommates.
Yeah. Oh, I see that a lot for sure. And, I mean, usually there's attachment dynamics in there. Most of the time, the wife has some degree of anxious attachment. So she has a lot of needs that are not being met by her husband. She feels unseen. She feels unheard. She feels ignored. She feels extremely alone inside of the relationship. The man usually has some degree of avoidant attachment, and he pours himself into work and into his hobbies to distract himself from his own emotions and to put a wall in the intimacy between himself and his wife. That's extremely common, that anxious avoidant trap in that specific scenario. And then the man feels like, my wife's always complaining. She's always nagging at me. Nothing I ever do is good enough. She doesn't see what I do to help. She's just not grateful. I work so hard and try to provide, and she's just always having a problem, right? Yeah. And then here the wife is like, no, I'm so alone. All you do is go to work, and you don't care about any of us. And it's a really common pattern. So when there's a lot of resentment, the very first thing that I do with my clients is, we have to have sort of a pact. We have to have a pact that we're starting over here. We have to have a pact that we're going to work towards forgiveness. And I give my clients a lot of tools to work towards forgiveness and to be dedicating to starting over and having a blank slate inside of their relationship. And I think those tools are pretty profound, and they're very healing for a lot of people who have been carrying a lot of bitterness and resentment. It's very empowering to be in that place. And when I can get couples to come together in that way and sort of make a pact that, hey, we've done this wrong. We've created a lot of negative dynamics in this relationship. We have hurt on both sides. But you know what? We have dedicated ourselves to healing, whatever that looks like, whatever that takes. He's going to do the hard work. She's going to do the hard work. And we need to start with this attitude of, it's relationship 2.0. Mm-hmm. Right?
I like that, because my mom always uses a saying, and she says, what starts out wrong ends wrong.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think by, like you said, restarting, just hit the refresh button.
Yeah. And people really have to understand the nature of forgiveness, and they have to know how to achieve it, or they can't be successful. Mm-hmm. So I can't just say, yeah, you got to forgive your partner. They're like, You don't know what I've been through. Years of resentment. You don't know what I've been through. Yeah, you don't know what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And I've forgiven my ex-husband. And if I can forgive him and I can forgive his affair partners and I can forgive people that really hurt me, I mean, I think everybody's capable of forgiveness if they want it and if they seek the right tools to achieve
it. If they want it, yes.
If they want it. You have to want it.
Mm-hmm. So I want to focus on young couples real quick. You know, I am a wedding photographer, so I see a lot of young couples getting married. Things are different now, though. They're different from when our parents were getting married and going through a relationship, and they're different from our grandparents because we now have technology. We now have social media. Everything is at the palm of our hand. There's so many outside interferences and temptations. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give a young couple like in their early 20s today of how to build a strong foundation?
Mm-hmm. Be personally accountable for your character. Develop rock solid character before you decide to be in an intimate relationship with someone else.
Okay. Yeah.
Because people with rock solid character don't cheat. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a bold statement, but they don't. They have insecurities or flaws that are causing them to cheat. And even if they are super unfulfilled in their relationship, well, then why aren't they setting boundaries? Why aren't they leaving that relationship before they're pursuing something new? Right? What they're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
And there's no excuse for it. There's absolutely no excuse under any circumstances where cheating or infidelity, emotional affairs even are okay. And so develop your own character to be rock solid. Heal your own attachment insecurities. Be dang sure that the person you're choosing also has rock solid character. Don't marry the red flags. Right?
Exactly, yes. You,
people know they're marrying the red flags. I knew I was marrying the red flags. And
I see
did it
so
anyway.
Often in young couples. Yeah. You know, they're, like you said, build your own character first.
Absolutely.
Before you go committing to a marriage. Because, yes, you know, there if there's already flaws and red flags, I mean, what do you think?
They get worse.
Yeah.
They will only get, the problems you have when you marry someone will triple.
Yes.
Will quadruple 10 years down the road. So they don't go away. Marriage doesn't make them better. Mm-hmm. Marriage makes them profoundly worse.
Exactly. And then add kids, add financial stress, home, everything on top of that. Yeah.
Yep.
Do you at any point tell your clients, you know, I think we're at the end of the road here. Like, I guess, do you ever reach a situation where there's no hope for a couple?
Yes, I do.
And what does that look like and how do you approach that?
It's more rare because most of the time people that are investing the money to see me are really wanting to do it, mm-hmm. right? Because coaching is an investment. I mean, insurance doesn't cover coaching. It's out of pocket. It's a little bit more expensive than therapy. So people that are willing to make the financial investment usually are wanting to do the work, right? They're like, okay, I'm willing to do what you tell me. But I have cases sometimes, usually, where one partner is significantly dismissive avoidant and they just don't want to do the work. And so you have one partner who desperately wants it. And then you have another partner who was kind of dragged there and is going through some of the motions, but not practicing the tools, not doing the exercises, not following the rules in the relationship that they were given. And you have to want it. And so what I usually help the other partner do is decide, are you willing to accept that this person is never going to give you anything different than what they're giving you now? Are you willing to be 100% at peace with that? If you are, proceed, keep going in your marriage. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you are, because you wouldn't have come to see me in the first place. So what does setting a boundary look like for you?
Right.
And how can you do that in a way that respects him, respects you, her, you know, whatever the relationship dynamic is? I actually had one of my favorite clients I think I've ever had yesterday. She just quote unquote graduated her coaching journey with me. And it started with her and her dismissive avoidant husband. And he didn't want to be there. She begged him to do it. And then he already had his mind made up that he wasn't going to participate in the process. And so when you're faced with someone who just says, I don't want to be any different than I am, if you can't accept them 100% for who they are and you're not happy, what's your alternative?
Right. you're only operating with 50% exactly of the relationship.
You can't change someone else. You can't force someone else to change. There's nothing you can do. The only person you have control of in the relationship is yourself. So I do see that. It's more rare, but I do see it. And what I usually help the other partner do is stop self-abandoning and start walking into their own empowerment. I always tell people, imagine you get to your deathbed. Close your eyes. You're on your deathbed. Would you have a regret that you never experienced secure and healthy love? If you never, you went through your whole life, you never knew what it felt like for someone to love you in a healthy way. Is that what you want? Because if you stay married, that's what you're going to get.
Right.
And sometimes that's what wakes them up and they're like, no, I don't want that.
That's interesting. I'm sure that gets people really thinking and that. Yeah. Wow. So you have group coaching.
I do.
Can you talk a little bit about that and let us know what you have coming up?
I'm super excited. Right now, we're just playing the IT waiting game. Everything's developed. Yes. We're just getting all the tech in order for it to launch. So I've built my own app, which is super exciting. And all of the group coaching will be done in the app. So I have an online course that they can access in the app. And I have a huge digital media library of a lot of long-form content videos on a lot of the topics that I'm asked about in terms of everything from boundaries to healing tips for each attachment style to narcissistic abuse, just anything, any kind of thing you can think about, I've kind of got in that digital library. And then the online course really walks you through healing your attachment. So there's videos for each attachment style, videos on how to identify your attachment, how to heal it, how to make positive changes in your relationship, how to communicate based on your attachment patterns, how to resolve conflict in a healthy way. All those things that I teach my clients in their one-on-one journey is in that online course. And then in addition to that course, you get four group live Zoom calls with me. So there's four chapters with a series of modules in each chapter. In the online course, you do one chapter, you go through all the modules, and then you meet in your weekly group Zoom call. You can be anonymous on that call if you want to. You can turn your camera off. You can put whatever name you want. It doesn't matter. You can participate anonymously or you can be very interactive. And you can get all your questions answered about the tools that they're learning, about their personal relationship circumstance. And I think it's really beautiful because so many people are struggling with similar problems. People love to think their problems are unique.
Right.
They're really not.
Yeah.
You know, they fall into a number of very, very predictable categories. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to get to hear about, you know, other people's situations, which I think can make you feel like you're not alone
in this
journey.
Absolutely.
And you can learn from the advice that other people are getting for their specific circumstances. So, and then they'll also have access to my client-only Facebook group where I will be interacting personally a lot with them, posting a lot more resources. So you just get a ton of resources, and it's going to be a lot more cost-effective than the one-on-one journey, which can... It's honestly, that's a little bit of an investment to do a one-on-one journey. And some people will always prefer that, and that's okay. I'm keeping that as an option for people. But I think group coaching is going to be a way for me to fulfill that demand. I'm booked out until March.
Wow.
And so...
So this is a way to get you...
Yes.
Now.
Yes, this is a way to get me now. And the biggest frustration I'm finding in my business is, although I have one coach under me right now, I have another coach that I've trained and certified that's getting ready to start. My other coach is getting completely booked up. I'm booked up for months. People really want to talk to me. I've been offering an after hours fee and people are paying a ridiculous amount of money just to get seen because they're heartbroken and they're in pain. And I get that. And I want to help heal as many people as I can. I feel like that's what God ended up putting me on the earth to do. And this is just going to be a way to fulfill that demand for sure.
Wow. And I'm so excited for this for you because I think, you know, getting any type of information from you. Like, I know I've gained so much just from your TikTok. So I know that this group coaching is going to be huge.
I hope so. I mean, because I am just so, so pumped about it. I've spent hundreds and hundreds of hours creating this content and just pouring my heart and soul into it. And just, I don't do any gatekeeping in that video. I mean, in order to draw people into more expensive coaching, I don't gatekeep at all. I'm giving you everything I got.
And one thing I love is that, you know, when you're going to someone for coaching, you want to you want to trust that they're going to genuinely help you. And I met Absolutely. You, what, an hour ago?
Yeah.
And I can tell that you care so much about this and mm-hmm. everything that you do. So I know just from knowing you for an hour yeah. that you have poured your heart and soul into this.
I absolutely have, because I mean, I went through so much pain, so much pain. I mean, at one point, this is really difficult to admit, but shortly after my ex-husband died, my mom was, the month before my ex-husband died, my mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And my mom was the only person in the world that I ever thought actually loved me. Right. Everyone else had been in my life, including my own father, I didn't really believe ever truly loved me. And so that person was dying. My ex-husband had just died. I had these two kids that were incredibly grief stricken and traumatized. I developed vestibular migraine from the stress to the point where I could barely function. I could barely do my job. And I was almost suicidal. It was my kids that really kept me alive, because I never would have left them. But if it weren't for them, it would have been over.
Wow.
And, the day I got on my knees and said, God, help me. I mean, I didn't really have much faith before then. And God said, I've got you. You know, I've always been there. And let me show you what I can do.
Wow. Well, God put you exactly where you need to be.
I believe it 100%.
Because you are changing lives. And I know that. So I mentioned TikTok.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? What is the best way to get in contact with you? Give us your TikTok info so that people can go follow you on that as well.
So I am The Dating Decoder on TikTok, Dr. Sarah Hensley, The Dating Decoder. Now, I will tell you that there are a million spoof accounts of me, and that is a problem with TikTok in general. Just a lot of larger creators end up getting people that try to mimic them and scam people or whatever.
Oh my
gosh. Not a unique problem to me, I don't think.
I see it so much and I'm like, what is this? Like, that's so hard to, you know, keep maintain your TikTok.
It is. It is. And it's, you know, so if you look at my profile, you'll see I have a really large following. If you're seeing people, they have like a couple thousand followers, it's not me. So they can. I'm going to try to get authenticated, I guess, or verified on TikTok. I'm going to try to get the blue check. I'm going to apply for that. I think I have enough followers now. So, they can find me on TikTok. It's probably the best way to find me. It's been really hard to grow Facebook and Instagram for some reason. It's just not grown like TikTok has. So I am on Instagram, The Dating Decoder. I'm on Facebook, The Dating Decoder. You can always go to my website. That's probably the best place to find me, thedatingdecoder.com. Fill out a contact form. You will get a message back with all of the ways that you can connect with me or book with me or one of my other coaches.
I am so excited to see where your coaching practice goes, because it's already amazing. And I just feel like you're really going up from here. So thank you so, so much for coming on the show today and being here. And thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Until next time. See you then. As always, I appreciate you all so much for listening. My goal is for these episodes to at least help one person in some aspect of their life. So if you like what you hear, don't forget to follow, like, subscribe to the show, as well as follow us on social media @InsideVoicePod. Thanks.